Class war, class war.
Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
That's my attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When the system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Da-da-da-da. to the Class War Battlefield Podcast. You know, I was a little bit different. I played the opening and then I jumped right into a music break. Not really a music break, but just a song that I think underscores the things that I not necessarily want to talk about, but the message that I want to convey. And as you can tell, the title of the episode is the title of the song. The song, of course, is They Don't Really Care About Us by Michael Jackson. And, you know, a lot of people have been playing a lot of Michael Jackson music since Michael Jackson died, God, almost 4 years ago now. Still can't believe it's been almost 4 years ago. But what is crazy to me is there's so many songs from his history album, and I'm talking about the new side, that a lot of people don't play. You know, a lot of people like Beat It and, you know, Want to Be Starting Something and all that from the 80s. But the history album really probably was Michael Jackson's most thorough project that he put himself into. The history project was, of course, supposed to be of the first volume, and he was going to do volume 2, which is usually the case. It's kind of ironic how that is. Like, artists will finally get to do a project that they really want to do, and they'll label it volume 1. And then they'll be like, yeah, you know, God, I can't wait to see what people respond to, you know, how they respond to it, and I'm going to do volume 2. And unfortunately, he didn't get to do volume 2. Not to say that he doesn't have the catalog. You know, if his family really wanted to, they could release a volume 2 easily with all new songs. You know, probably, you know, you could put 30 songs on that album easily, because he was constantly recording before he died, and he was known to constantly record. The man, it's known that he had probably thousands of unreleased songs. It's quite incredible to think about. But aside from Michael, the message is pretty clear. They don't really care about us. And I think many people have been feeling this quite lately. Whether it's Obama, whether it's Congress, whether it is their jobs, that the people in, quote, power, and I say that because they are in power because we give them that ability to be in, quote, power. We give them power, so they are in it. But the feeling is pretty mutual, that these people just have no clue and that they don't care about us. Now, those of you who are old enough to remember may remember this, what I'm about to talk about. It kind of underscores how they don't really care about us because they don't understand us. They make policies that dictate to us how we need to act, but they don't actually understand how we live. And they don't seem to be in any kind of mood to learn how we live. Back during the 1992 presidential campaign, of course it was predominantly Bill Clinton and Bush, but you also had Ross Perot coming in. But if memory serves me correctly, George W. Bush went to a grocery store to kind of, you know, say how he was from, you know, he was with the common man. George W. Bush ain't never been a common man. He grew up extraordinarily wealthy, and, you know, that's what he knows. But he decided to try to connect with the common man by going to a grocery store, and he was absolutely fascinated by the scanning machine because he had never seen anything like it. People, of course, automatically jumped on him and said, "Huh. This guy is not like us. He is not one of us." There was also another moment where it was quite funny when MTV used to actually be good, where George W. Bush, Freudian slips. I think I've been saying George W. Bush, but it's George H. W. Bush, George 1, which can anyone say King? King when you start saying George 1, George 2? But he was conducting an interview with MTV News, and they were asking him some pretty hyped up questions, and you know, there's a lot of youthful energy, and they're gonna fling questions at you quick. And George Bush got a little testy with him. George Bush got a little bit testy with him, and it played horribly to a younger generation. Basically, it was like, oh, grandpa's, you know, getting a little bit testy with his children. I think we need to leave him alone. And, you know, it was, to other people, it was, oh, well, he's not used to being questioned. You know, he was the head of the Central Intelligence Agency and this and that and that. And the man doesn't get questioned. It's just what he says goes. But, so what is all this leading to, right? It's, wow, nice trip down memory lane, but where are you going with all this? Well, first and foremost, like I said, that kind of dictates the whole feeling that they really don't care about us because they don't know us, they don't understand us, and they don't necessarily want to get to know us. But also, where this is actually going is this deep feeling of discontentment within people. And people can't even articulate their feelings anymore because they don't understand it. I work in a place right now. I work in a factory. And see, a year ago when I was doing these, I worked in a different place and I was making a lot more money. I was actually making about $1.35 more. Now, this year, I'm working at a different job and I'm making, of course, $1.35 less. But it's kind of ironic because I work in a place where, forget about making money, these people make a lot of money. A lot of money. The individual factory that I work at make about, you know, $250 million a year. Now I'm making, and I know many of you who are listening to this can absolutely relate to this. I'm making $9.35 an hour. Now many of you might be saying, oh man, I wish I was making, you know, $9.35 an action. I think it's $9.25 an hour, you know, and I completely relate to that. I completely understand that. But let's not lose sight of what I'm saying. Don't throw me under the bus because I'm making a little bit more than you. We're still in the same boat. And this is how those people who don't care about us have us thinking now. Where we're trying to eat each other who are in the slave class instead of saying, you know something, you're with me because you're still not making as much money as you should be making. We're not making living wages. See, they're dividing and conquering us, so we got to stop that. But, so, I'm making this kind of money, and everybody around me are making this kind of money. People who are running machines are making about $1 more. If you work weekends, you're making $1.50 more, $2 more, something like that. But, again, the company's making $250 million a year, and that's not profit. They're probably doing a 30-40% profit margin, and I know this because some of the products that we do there, that we produce, are incredibly, you know, the markup is incredible. You're talking about a 200-300% markup. So, you know, one night in particular, we produced of this one product that a friend who happened to be on the line knows somebody who actually orders it, so they know exactly what they're paying for it. And she looked at me and said, yeah, this thing right here, this costs about $15 if you order it from the company. And so, you know, we produced 24,000 of those in one night. And, you know, I did what I do. I did the math really quickly. And I said, whoa, you mean tonight we made them over $300,000 worth of product in one night? And I'm making how much? You know, how many of you have felt that? How many of you go to a job which you completely hate? Let's say, you know, what, about 20 minutes from me is a mall. A big mall, actually. And there's, during the summer, there's a couple of stores in there that I know the people aren't making that much money. And I know that it is absolutely fanatic in there in the summer. I know this because I've talked to people who work there. And they probably push through, you know, $20,000, $30,000 worth of business every day. $20,000, $30,000 worth of business every day. And yet, these people are making $8 and $9 an hour. You see where I'm kind of going with this, huh? Now, I've talked many times about the myth of employment. I've talked many times about the myth of work. I've talked many times about the basic philosophy of getting us to give our life energy over to something that we don't really need to be doing. Or at the most, or at the least, if we do need to be doing it, we don't need to be doing it as much as we do. The numbers are out there, people. Check out the production. Check out the production of the average American worker. It's not going down. It's going up. We are working more for less. That's the problem. Which is where we come into the concept of they don't really care about us. Because they don't. They don't. And if you want proof of this, I'm working right now as much as I could, to be honest with you. I was about to say very hard, but as much as I could, you know, because I'm working 40 hours a week. I'm working right now on a couple of new multi-part episodes. The first one is on security and the security and surveillance state. And this is really a underpinning of the notion that they don't really care about us. The amount of money that they are, that the quote elites, because there ain't nothing elite about them. The only thing elite about these people is they are taught to have no conscience, and many of them just don't have any consciences. That's the only thing elite about them. The amount of money that they're pushing the elite, quote, into surveillance, into fear tactics, because that's, you can always tell when an abuser is fearful of losing their position, their ability to abuse people. You can always tell this when they start implementing hard tactics of fear to maintain their position of power. What they do, and if you've listened to the Family America episode, you know I started talking about this. If you haven't, go back and listen to it. You can get it on radioforall.net. What they first do, because when abusers become really frightened that they're going to lose their position, and their position is what gives them the authority that their false ego needs to continue on day in, day out to define themselves. What do? They first will go after the strongest member of the family. And they'll try to, in one way or another, usually in a way that doesn't impact them negatively or make them look bad, to get rid of them. To get rid of them. So they will first try to turn everybody against them. Then if that doesn't work, they'll just kick them out the house for no reason. Or, if that doesn't work, some of the more crazier abusers would just kill them. So we've kind of been through that. That was much of the 1900s. That was this conscienceless group of people going after the labor rights, going after the unions, going after the civil rights movement, going after the women rights movement, going after the human rights movement. They were going after anything that could stop them from being in the position that they were in. Because, like I said before, they feel like they should be there. That's their feelings. So now we've moved into an era where they're beyond reactionaries. See, because people are starting to wake up to the fact. And, you know, I think it's the same group of people who are always existent within a generation are starting to wake up to the fact that, wait a minute, there's a problem here. Our family isn't perfect. And the people who are making it unperfect, or the person who is making it unperfect, is the abusers over there. We've been living with these abusers now for two generations. Can't we do something to break this? So now you have groups of people, you have individuals within the family who are saying, I think we need to go and get some counseling to get rid of this abusive structure. Well, now you have the exploitative abusers who are there and saying, but I don't want you to get counseling. I don't think you need counseling. If you get counseling, then what happens to us? See, because those people who are exploiting don't want to let go of that privileged position. They don't want that person to change. And this is what we have going on in the society. This is where the hard tactics of fear are coming in at, because they don't want us seeking psychology or psychiatrists so we can actually amend the problems that are afflicting our society. They don't want that. They fear that. They fear it. So, with all of that said, with, you know, that whole, you know, thing taken care of now, what does this have to do with the job? With the job. Like I said before, Americans are more productive. We are working longer hours for less pay, and we are producing more. As we are producing more, the price of food, and by the way, we are making less, the price of food is going up. Everything is going up. Now, there is some basic reasons for this, basic reasons that mankind cannot control. The first reason is something mankind cannot control, and that's called drought. Well, actually, we could control that, but, you know, we've decided not to for the last 30, 40 years as conservative idiots, and I tend to not use those terms together, conservative idiots, but truthfully, it's getting to the point where you're not tolerant of ignorance anymore. I'm not going to be tolerant of ignorant anymore, and these people are ignorant. You know, sooner or later, you have to treat 20% of the population who are nothing but empty-headed dumbos like they are the handicapped members of the society that they are. I was once told by a person, you can't argue with ignorance any more than you can argue with a wall. So why do you do it? And I said, because they're humans, and they should be respected as such. And he said, yeah, they're humans, all right. That has nothing to do with you not arguing with them. It has nothing to do with you saying to them, you know something, you're that 20% of the population who has nothing in their mind, and you are primitive in your thought. And that's fine. You can be primitive in your thought, but don't ruin my society because you want to be primitive. Sit over there, child. Let the adults handle things. And it sucks to have to say that, because I don't like being like that, but it's getting to the point where we're trying to accommodate people who don't have the sense enough to actually think through hardcore problems. And you can't, you know, you any more than you let a child, usually, any more than you'll let a child fix your electricity in the house or the plumbing in your house. And I'm talking about a five-year-old. You know, you can't let these people fix healthcare. You can't let them run an economy. You can't let them do anything like that because they don't have the mental capacity to do it. And it's a shame to say it, but it's the truth. And not all conservatives fall into this category. Before you get angry at me and start writing me emails about how I don't get conservative. But you got to be realistic about the people who you were talking to. And the people who I've met, these supposed low-information voters, they're not low-information voters. They just are no-information voters. But so we could have done something about the problems that have led up to climate change or global warming 30 years ago, 40 years ago, but we decided not to because we were going to listen to them. We were going to listen to them. So that's something that mankind could have controlled. Truthfully, I think that's pretty much the only thing. Maybe number two would be the diversity of what we actually plant. You know, I was talking to a farmer friend of mine the other day, actually yesterday, the day before I'm recording this, and he was saying just how many of the farmers that he knows, you know, they're chasing money. That's what they're doing. They're just absolutely chasing money. And the system is set up for that. But they have went from planting corn to planting soybean because it's easier to plant. They don't have to do much for it. It's been genetically re-engineered, which I have so many problems with that, but whatever. And by the way, it's been genetically re-engineered to be Roundup ready, you know, so you can spray that absolutely nasty chemical Roundup on it. But and the return is good. So that's what they've been doing. Now, what's funny is, and I didn't realize this, but I've said before, I live in Western New York. You know, we've been in a drought for the last year, 2 years, 3 years, something like that. And it's been good for the farmers up here. They're happy about it. Because the crops that they're planting, they don't require a lot of water. So they're quite happy about that. And I'm looking at him going, are you serious? Do you guys understand what's going on out in the Midwest? If that comes over here, those farmers aren't going to be any longer happy. But they don't apparently understand that because the generation that, you know, I was talking to there, you know, that's the baby boomer generation. That's the me, I am very selfish generation. And yet the generation wonders where my generation got it from and the generation after mine. We got it from you. So the diversity is something that we could be addressing. We should be actually planting more types of plants than we are. We need biodiversity again, but you know, unfortunately, until we kind of, I think, make the baby boomers sit down and say, y'all retire, you guys have done enough damage, let us do what we got to do to fix it, or try to fix it, nothing's going to change. So those are two things that we could have done. Those are two things that, you know, kind of are us. But the other things that are going into the heightening of food prices. And the predominant thing, there's two things. The first is speculation on things that go into the food. So speculation on corn, speculation on wheat, speculation on rice. The, quote, natural cycles of the market, which mean that we sell low grain, or not low grain, but low cost grain to other nations, thus stopping them from being able to send good quality grain at reasonable prices into this nation, basically giving the people in this nation who have those grains a monopoly, who sells that food a monopoly. The second thing, and this is something that people don't know, is we've really regressed with ownership in this nation. We've gotten to a point in this nation where the majority of our food, the majority of our companies are owned by these big financial, what are they called? Investment firms. And the investment firms are in it to make money. They don't care what they've, you know, if they've bought a nursing home, which they do. They'll fire the staff, you know, cut down on the quality of care just so they can make a quick buck and then they'll sell it. They don't care if they're producing good food, bad food, indifferent food. They just want to produce enough food, enough whatever, so that they can make a ton of money. You know, I said we regressed. Well, if you know anything about history, this was us back in the early 1900s, the late actual 1800s too, predominantly, before like the Food and Drug Act came through. You had companies who were making and producing items on the level of addictiveness that those items were to people so that they could continuously make money. This is, you know, we had a really bad morphine and opium addiction going on in this country. Because companies wanted to make money. So you had investment houses, well, not really, not always investment houses, but you had these people who would be creating things and selling them to people. And they'd be saying, oh, well, this cures your back pain, or this cures gallstones, when the reality is, yeah, it may have done those things, but it only did them periodically, and the reason why I did it was because it was a heavily narcotic drug that was involved in it. I have heard numerous people, and I can attest to this, say just exactly how addictive sugar is to us. And look at the amount of sugar that we eat. Look at how we get that sugar. And look at the things that sugar is in. Sugar is in everything. Everything. And I can't help but to think, you know, we've gotten to a point again where it's just, it's all about addictiveness. They want to sell us things all about addictiveness. Now, excuse me, to show exactly how this money-making thing works, okay? Many of us, I want to say about 30 years old, we can definitely remember the time once when we can go to the store and we can get a bag of chips. You know where I'm going with this. And the bag is going to be majority full, right? You know, you have a bag of chips, nice size bag of chips. You go to the store, maybe 99 cents, maybe $1.29. And those chips, that bag is going to be nearly full. Today, you get the same size bag or about the same size bag. It looks full. You pop it open. It's not even half full. You just paid almost $3 for a bag of chips. That isn't a bag of chips. It's a quarter of a bag of chips. It's less than 50% of a bag of chips. So what the heck are you paying for, right? You are paying for, as it was said to me many years ago, you're paying for the name, but it's more so than that now. You're paying for the name, and you're paying for the fact that that name is now owned by a financial institution who all they want to do is make money. So what are they going to do? They are going to slash prices on everything that they can do. So that means you're going to get a worse quality product, which is worse for your body, but at a higher price, which I never did understand that. I never understood how fruit could cost more than a Snickers bar. When fruit is something that nature gives to you and a Snickers bar is something that is basically chemicals. Like I said, they don't really care about us, because if they did, you know, at all this talk about, oh, well, let's make, you know, let's have people eat more fruits and vegetables, then you'd bring the price down. When I go and, you know, people can say whatever they want to about schools and whatever. Schools, institutions like that, they get to buy in bulk. So their prices are going to be naturally lower. When I walk into the store, and you know this, when we walk into the store and we want something healthy, you know how much it costs to get fruit opposed to fruit juice, which has corn in it, which has all of these preservatives and stuff that is not so good for your body in it. You know how much it costs to get organic fruit juice, and yet to get that same other fruit juice that has corn syrup and blah, blah, blah in it. They don't really care about us. Now, I said all of this, you know, with the whole notion of we're making less money and everything's going up, right? So what other things should I be talking to you about that say they don't really care about us? Well, how about the respect of family? You know, all of these, Walmart, for instance, I was about to say all these companies, but Walmart, for instance, well, we are, you know, conservative family values people. And yet, they don't give you time off to go and spend with your family, where you're getting paid for it. Walmart is the richest corporation in this nation, I think, other than maybe Microsoft. Microsoft might beat them. But yet, Their family values people. Why don't they give people time off to be with their families? Paid time off. I was thinking about that today, you know, where it finally hit my my job, the flu. And it's knocked some people down. I know you can relate to that. But there were a couple people who were obviously at work and obviously sick. Obviously sick. One in particular took 2-3 days off. And the way that we work, we have 4 days on, we work 10 days, and then we're off 3 days. The person took the Thursday off, was sick all through the weekend, took Monday and Tuesday off, They took Wednesday and Thursday off, and they took Monday off, and then they came back on Tuesday, and they still look sick. And all I could do was just look at him. And this is a person who actually has been hired by the company. The majority of the people, of course, who work at the job that I work at, were temps. There's people who's been there for 2-3 years being a temp. What makes you a temp when you're there, when you're in a place for 2 or 3 years? You're not a temp anymore. But either way, the person has time off, but they have so little of it that they can only afford to take off those 3 days. Now, there's another person there who's a temp who couldn't afford to take it off. She's a mother. And so she's been really suffering through it for the last week because she can't take the time off to get better. This person has been there for nearly a year. They don't really care about us. People, I've heard people in this job say to me many times, well, you know, you got to be happy that you have a job. And I instantly rebuke them and say, no, I don't. I absolutely don't have to be happy that I have a job. Because I have a job. It's called living. And this, quote, job, this employment, doesn't give me the means necessary to live. It gives me the means necessary to exist. I'm not going to be happy that I have a, quote, job, while this job, quote, again, is making $250 million, and they are telling me that the price that they're paying me, the, quote, wage that they're paying me, is competitive with the people who are around them. It's competitive with McDonald's, which is also an abomination, because McDonald's makes so much money, those people should be making $13 and $14 an hour. That's what they should be making, but they're not. Because McDonald's likes their money. Ba-da-da-da-da. I love my money. And if they want to sue me for using that, hey, you don't even really use it anymore. But that's all you. Stop loving your money. Start paying the people what they deserve to be paid, and I'll stop saying it. Walmart's the same way. All of these companies. Why do we have an allegiance to these things? Why do we have an allegiance to these things? To say that you're part of a union today is like saying that you're part of the Communist Party. People think that you're the enemy. I live in a very poor area of the state. And I can tell you, telling people that we need unions is like telling them that they need to sit on the curb while I kick them in the face. They don't comprehend that the union, since the union has been eradicated throughout the nation, and it's not gone completely, but it's really down right now. Wages have gone down. Unions aren't the problem, it's corporations, and I constantly have to keep telling people this. I usually have to tell them 3 or 4 times, you know, you have to get through the propaganda which has been programmed in them since they were first born. Unions are the problem. No, corporations are the problem. Unions are the solution. And look, it's a human institution. It's never going to be perfect. But at the same time, I say this. You don't put you know, Martin Luther King, we just passed his holiday, used to say, in reference really to the problems of integration that Malcolm X had, that we did not want to be integrated into a burning building. And that's true. He recognized that white society that we were trying to integrate into was on the wrong course. And if we integrated into it as we did, we would also be on the wrong course, and it would do more damage to us than good. And it has. And it has. So I take from that, you know, you can have unions all you want, but if you're putting a union in a situation where profit motive is first, not human worth, not human dignity, not human rights, not family rights, not communal rights, but economic rights. When you put a union into a situation where economic rights is the chief motivator, what's going to happen to that union? That union is going to become an instrument of economic prowess. It's not going to become an instrument of human rights. It is going to make some of the same decisions that the capitalists make. So therefore, as says in my introduction, the system must be evolved. And truthfully, we've hit a wall. We have hit actually several walls right now, which tells you that either the system will be evolved or the system will kill us. And as I recently said to somebody, you know, they asked me why was I so angry about, you know, the job. They said I can go and find another job. And I said, really? Where? I said, because, you know, if I go, I've been to college. And there's many people who have been to college for 4 years, 5 years, 6 years. They're in worse jobs than I'm in because the jobs aren't there. The jobs are not there. And he said, well, you know, you're right about that, but why be angry about it? And I said, because that's the first step of changing things, is recognizing that there's a problem and getting angry about it. Then you start discussing how you solve the problem. I went on to tell him, you know, that the problem's going to be solved. We're going to go one or two ways. We're going to go towards a police state, which right now is where we're heading, because people want to pretend like it doesn't happen, or not happen, that it doesn't matter, that if we just keep sitting and being quiet, like we've been told since we were 10, that things are going to change. You're not 10 anymore. You're older. Things aren't going to change. Mommy and Daddy doesn't care. Uncle Sam is not real. Uncle Sam is Big Brother. Uncle Sam is Big Brother. You understand me with that? Uncle Sam is Big Brother. Which is kind of funny. 1984 is supposed to be about socialism. It's more about corporatism to me, but whatever. But whatever. So, the two walls that we have hit is growth. There's no longer... growth is done. The end of growth is here. You know, we might as well embrace it. It's done. It's done. Second. Environmental. And we've already talked about this a little bit earlier. And I'm not going to really get into it. Those are the two walls that we've hit. And you can see rich men, predominantly rich men, but some rich women, positioning themselves to take advantage, one, of resources, so that they can continue to utilize them. And trust me when I tell you, they're not going to share with us in 10 years. Mark this, you know, cut it out. Put it up, boom. When the resources become more scant, that includes fresh water, people. In Qatar, they're building salinization plants all over the country because they understand fresh water is going to be an issue. Do you know what a salinization plant does? It takes the salt and the heavier aspects out of seawater, so it turns it into fresh water. Why aren't we doing that in this nation? We need to be doing that now. Not debating it in Congress. Congress, who can pass legislation to put us all under surveillance at a drop of a dime, they can't do anything about this? They can't do anything about this. This is when resources become less, people, when they become less in 10 years, let's see how much is left over for you and your family. Knock on your head right now. This is what I'm doing. I want you to mark this. I want you to write it down on your calendar. I want you to cut out that page and stick it to your wall. 10 years from now, when resources are really scarce, I want you to think about your family and how much better your family is. Some of you, it's going to get better for you. But for the majority of you, you're going to wake up to a hard reality. They don't really care about you. The resources aren't going to be there for you. And if you want to see, if you really want to see how much they care about you, look into the coups that the United States government, the CIA, whoever, organized in South America. And see what kind of human rights they executed. See what kind of human rights they put up with the dictators that they actually supported. And now look at your family and tell me that you're not worried about that happening now that resources are getting low. When resources get low, let's see how much of it's left over for your family. It's going to be mostly for them. Now, I'm going to close this off. You know, like I said, when I kind of spent a little bit too much time on the resources thing, but it's true. And that's one of the things that bothers me the most about the time that we're living in. People don't, they're not able to make the connection between what's happening now and the current that's going to drive us 10 years into the future. It's bad. It is bad. But these people are going to take up the resources. They're going to put you under more massive surveillance, which, by the way, just to make a mention of it, I need to make a mention of this. One of the things that was realized in the South prior to the Civil War was in order to keep the slave population, which, if memory serves me, it outnumbered the free population significantly. In order to keep them enslaved, they were kind of evolving into a military or a security state. To keep the majority of the people enslaved, they were evolving into a military or security state with many militias on patrol to look out for runaway slaves. I see a very, very good correlation between that time period and this time period. Think about it. You will too. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's it for the day. I want to thank you. You can always contact me at classwarbattlefield@live.com. This is Vladimir Dees saying there's going to be some things that make it difficult for you to smile. But through it all, keep your head up. Peace. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone. And there are lives in the balance. Thank you.